Education Coordinator. We have Verlon mic'd up, but just as a reminder, if you have comments and you're answering questions, this room can be really hard to hear with people giving comments, so use your outside voice. Everybody understands what that is, because it really can be especially if you're, and you want people to be involved from the balcony too. So Verlon, you remind them if they're speaking too softly. So it's my pleasure again to introduce Verlon Brown, and he's going to help us learn how to be disruptive. Is that true? Okay.
All right. Thanks for coming, everybody. How many of you were here for the first time? How many are here for the first time now? Oh, okay. So we're going to need some review. What's the take home for people for people who are here for the first time? Anybody?
I'm a racist.
No, not really. That's not a take home.
No, that's not the take home.
But what you remember.
Yep.
I would say when we think of racism, we shouldn't think about individuals and their behavior. I mean, if somebody, you know, doesn't like black people, I mean, that's more bigotry. We should think of systems and how systems affect the white supremacy and those kinds of issues.
All right. Anything else anyone else want to add, or is that okay? Yep.
There is the stories that were told in the first session, and there is a lot of people who had issues that started in their childhood and didn't come from good homes, weren't able to get through an education. There was mental illness. There was a lot of drugs or alcoholism for the people that you are working with.
Oh, you're back on to homelessness.
Homelessness. Oh, okay. Hold on.
Anyone else? Anything they can add to this?
Here.
Yeah.
It was the list on the board of the history of all the either legislation or acts through history. You know, we know about redlining and the Reconstruction and Jim Crow, but it was all the other aspects that I had not known. Mm-hmm. And you did an eloquent job explaining the cumulative mm-hmm. over hundreds of years that I had not seen even that list before.
Totally.
Okay, thank you. Who knows the equation of racism?
Prejudice plus power?
Exactly. Equals?
Racism.
All right. So prejudice, meaning you may not like who I am as a person, but individually there's not much you can do. You cannot talk to me, you can go the other way when you see me going down the street or whatever, say things behind my back, but you can't really do anything to hurt me. You need power to hurt me. And so all of this, all of these things that are factual things that happened to black people over the years took power, meaning the Congress generally passed this through for this to be considered, these could be considered racist acts. All right? So we'll start with today's. Let me ask you some questions. When you think, and be as honest with these as you can, when you think of black people, what comes to your mind? Just yell it out and I'll write, but let me tell you, I can't spell very well. So if that bothers you, you can come up here and write these yourself. If not, I'll do the best I can with my Kansas City education. All right. What do you associate with black people?
Obama,
okay.
Slavery.
Jazz. My children.
Athletic.
Humor.
What?
Humor. Rhythm.
Rhythm.
Music.
Music, well, I have jazz out here, but I'll put music next to it.
Yeah, rap.
Rap. All right.
Oppress.
Scared.
Scared?
Scary.
Resilient.
Separate.
Impoverished.
Impoverished?
HBCUs.
HBCU, what's that?
The Historically Black College and University.
Oh, that's right. Is that it?
Family. Family oriented.
Single mothers.
Mm-hmm. Single mothers.
Prison.
Lack of education.
Poor education. Spiritual. Scientists.
Underrepresented in education.
Stereotyped.
Targets of unfair policing.
Leaders.
Unfair policing, I'm just going to put stop and frisk.
Afros.
Afros, really?
That just shows how old you are.
I am old.
Basketball.
Basketball.
Yeah, you got
sports. Well, we got athletics.
Athletics.
Yeah. Okay. And then I'm going to try to write in between the spaces. What comes to mind when you think of white people?
Privilege.
Money.
Power.
Education.
Power.
You sound here.
Bigotry. Okay.
Fearful.
Ignorant. Insulated.
Majorities.
Colonization.
Defined the neighborhood.
Greedy.
Nervous.
Blind.
Boring.
You people are going into stereotypes.
Oversensitive.
Solicitous. Nobody knows how to spell that either.
Yeah, don't.
Indignant.
All right, I think I'm going to stop. So of these things, which one would you say, what do you see as the difference between this list?
Power.
What did you say? Power, what else?
Position.
Socioeconomic.
Education.
I think one of the differences...
Say that again?
One of the differences I see is that given the makeup of the people in this room, mm-hmm. it's like nobody really wanted to say anything negative about black people.
Well, yeah, that's true.
You know, and there's a lot of negativity about white people, and I'm not saying that, and I think all of these are true, but it's interesting that because we're all white, and maybe because you're black, I don't know, nobody came out with their sort of inner racism, which I know we all have.
Well, most of us are Lutheran, too.
True. That's that deficit.
I think if we had started with what do you think about Asians and then moved to whites, I think the white list would be different.
Say that again?
I think if you'd asked us what we thought of Asians and then moved on to what we thought of whites, I think the white list would look very different than it does right now.
Oh, okay. All right.
So would the other one.
So what makes the difference do you see between the whites and the... And is there a difference here that you see? You said powers. I'm getting at something here.
Privilege.
There you go. So there's a whole thing of privilege that's connected with being white. I mean, when you think white, you think well off. You know, when you think educated, you think well traveled. You know, even though there's plenty of whites who are not that. But in general, you know, you think of the other. And so this brings me to this gentleman right here. His name is Noel Ignatieff, and he's a historian and he talks about his thing is that we need to abolish the white race. Not white people, just the white race. We need to abolish whiteness. That whiteness just means privilege. And that when people think of being white, they think of being privileged. There's no, you know, white is not associated necessarily with anything but the color of skin. People come to this country, and it doesn't take them long to realize that if they're white, they can drop the accent, if they can, and then blend in and become white and are eligible for those privileges. I have a friend of mine who's Hispanic, and she said her father and her relatives told her to marry somebody white because you want to lighten up the race so you can get along better. And so there's this understanding that being white means privileges. And he wrote a book called When the Irish Were Black. And the whole thing is about when the Irish first came to this country, they were treated like black people. But over the years, they learned to act like white people and get those privileges that white people get. And one of the things that they did to act like white people is that they became cops and beat up black people. And so that, you know, that's one of the things that moved them along in society. And so Noel Ignatov's thing is to abolish the white race as it is. And so he says that what we should do is disassociate. What whites should do is disassociate themselves from whiteness. One of the things he talks about is, I think I mentioned it the other day, when you hear a joke against another race, you say, oh, I'm sorry. You thought I was white. I'm not. To use your privilege not to take the road less traveled, and not to take the path of least resistance, I mean, not to take the path of least resistance, and to take your privilege to make it work for someone of color. That's where he's coming from. That's his whole thing. His whole thing is treason to whiteness is love of humanity. And so the more you can disassociate yourself from being white and all of those privileges that you get, the more, you know, you get to humanity. But, you know, we know how difficult it is to give up, you know, your privileges. But I have some stuff that, a list of things that help people, that white people can do. When I was working on these sessions that I'm doing, I asked plenty of white people, what do you think is the most important thing white people need to know about racism? And basically 99% of them said, what can we do? You know, what is it we can do? They seem to be at a loss of what to do in terms of privilege, the privilege that white people have as opposed to black people. And so I came up with a list of things you can do. One is this, one is this group called the Redneck Revolt. Who's heard of them? They're out of Kansas and Colorado. I saw a hand. Has someone heard of them?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
The term redneck tells you all you need to know.
Their thing is to fight against rednecks, and when they take up arms against black people, they show up with their arms as well, And these are all white people. And they end up having a standoff to make sure that the community isn't bullied by rednecks. And the guy who runs it says, there's two ways you can use your white privilege. You can use your white privilege to drive down a one-way street 90 miles an hour and get away with it, or you can use it to protect and defend black people. And so that's his thing, using his white privilege to carry a gun, because you know that black people can't carry a gun and get away with it very long. And so that was one of the things. Another one is called Antifa, which is anti-fascism. And it's a group that fights fascism in every way that they can do it. And they're a group of white youngsters who fight fascism. The same way with the John Brown Gun Club. They're the same way. They pick up arms. Tacoma against Nazism, you know, that's all you need to know. Whenever Nazis show up and they want to have a parade, the Tacoma against Nazism, they show up with their guns and they parade as well. Vera Point Art, they work on fascist art. They're against fascist art. Their whole art gallery is art that's non-fascist. And another one is voting, because most people in the Congress are white men over 50. Mm-hmm. And if we want to make any changes in this country, we have to vote for women and people of color. Mm-hmm. And with your vote, that's one way you can move society along, make society less racist. Because it's been proven that white men over 50 are only going to continue the status quo. And so that's something everybody can do. I understand not everyone's going to take up arms, but I put it down there because it's a reality.
Not all anti-fascists take up arms either.
Say that again?
Not all anti-fascists.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. And another thing is teaching your children the truth. I mean, how many people teach this to their kids? I mean, even our school system, they don't teach this to the kids. They leave this out. And the reality is that America is stolen land with worked over by stolen bodies, you know. That's how America has done it. They stole the land, and then with slaves, they built the land. And they did it. This is the blueprint of how it was done. And so tell your children that story. You know, let them know that that's what's going on in their country. And maybe that will be the impetus for change. Because this is heavy stuff. This is difficult. To go through life knowing that that's what you did to get where you are. And instead of not telling your children and have them believe that that whites are all great people and have done wonderful things. And I'm not saying that whites haven't done that, but I'm just saying as a rule, this is the reality. Martin Luther King, everybody talks about his speech, "I Have a Dream," but who can tell me something else that he said in the speech about a check? He says, "We have come here to return a canceled check. This check is marked null and void." And he was talking about the money that was made by black people because of this list. But nobody talks about that in the speech. They all go on and on about the dream. But in reality, he said, you know, he's here because of the stolen, because of the check marked null and void, that he could not cash this check that was supposed to, that is meant for black people. I can't remember her name now. Who's the black Muslim woman who's the congressperson from Minnesota?
Ilhan Omar.
Say that again?
Ilhan Omar.
Yeah. She said some things about Netanyahu that Netanyahu didn't like. Mm-hmm. And then in response, Trump said his usual stuff. And they were interviewing her, and she said she was under the understanding that Nancy Pelosi talked with her and said, maybe you should slow down and see how Congress works before you start spouting off your mouth. And she said she didn't think she was elected just to sit and be quiet. She thought that she was elected to pursue truth and justice. And she said that she's here to do good work, to make good trouble. And I like that term, good trouble, because that's what justice is. Justice is good trouble. And that's what God is asking us to do. That's what Scripture is about, good trouble. And that's what we're supposed to be moving towards. And so when you work for justice, you're doing good trouble. Michael Moore, he said that he was never going to hire white people to work for him again. That his way of dealing with the issues with racism is to make sure that everybody he hires from now on is a person of color. And he says he didn't see it any different as hiring your relatives. But he said, and that's his little piece that he wants to contribute, you know. So he's trying to work to make sure, you know, to do something in relation to this list. And that's our call, that's your call as white people, to make sure that you share the resources and not just use up the resources and keep them for yourselves. Here are, I didn't print enough, but these are based on the 12-step program. And one is about being addicted. Ignatie here says that white people are addicted to white privileges. And you must approach it like a 12-step program. And so I got two sheets. One has to do with being addicted to white privilege. The other one has to do with,
We have 12 steps.
Would you read the 12-step one?
These 12 steps form an excellent framework for pulling ourselves out of our addictions. With just a few tweaks, the 12 steps can be used to confront addiction to white privilege as well. No system is perfect, but working these 12 steps can be helpful. Step one, we admit we are powerless over our addiction to white privilege, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Confession. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings to them all. There's no step eight. Step nine, take a short break. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 12, sought through prayer and mediation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. Step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others addicted to white privilege and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
All right, thank you. Does anyone have any issues or anything about that? Anything they want to say about that? Does it touch on anything for anybody? Or does it make any sense? Or doesn't make sense to anybody?
Merlon?
Yeah?
Would it be step four, would that be akin to making a list of all our white privileges like Peggy McIntosh did that you presented the other day?
Yeah. Yeah. That would be. Or yours personally, not so much on that list, but things that you're aware of in your own personal life that are privileges that you fall back on. I can't say what they are, only you know what they are. I had a friend of mine, she told me every time she got stopped by the cops for speeding, she would cry. And, you know, that was part of her privilege, you know, because she could get away with that. Other women couldn't. So, something to that effect.
Well, on our list, there is a number 8, and I think it's important because it's making a list of all persons we have harmed and become willing to make amends.
Say that again.
Well, the list that I'm looking at has a number 8. And it's, to me, it's important because it says, made a list of all persons we had harmed and become willing to make amends to them all.
That's on the
other one.
There's two sheets. They're not the same sheet, but I don't know. One started over here, one started over here.
This is the anti-racist folks stuff. Do
you
guys have this? No, they got it. They got a different.
We got
it. Would somebody read the anti-racist 12 step in their outside voice?
We admitted we were responsible for racism, that during our lives we were either conscious or unconscious of our racism and did nothing to stop the hardships caused by our racist actions and behaviors. Came to believe that racism is a disease and that our continual awareness of our conscious and unconscious racism could restore our humanity. 3. Made a conscious decision to turn our lives around to confront and challenge our racist actions and behaviors, intended and unintended. 4. Made a conscious and fearless moral personal inventory of our racist actions and behaviors, intended and unintended. 5. Admitted to ourselves and another human being the exact ways in which we participated in racist actions and behaviors, intended and unintended. 6. We were entirely ready to admit and remove all of our defective racist acts and behaviors that contributed to a racist society. 7. Humbly ask other anti-racist individuals, groups, organizations, and institutions to assist and help remove our racist shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take a moral personal inventory of our intended and unintended racist actions and behaviors and promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through involvement and engagement in the actions of other anti-racist individuals, groups, organizations, and institutions to improve our conscious awareness of our racist actions and behaviors, intended and unintended. 12. Having had a continual awareness of our conscious involvement in racist actions and behaviors, tried to carry this message of anti-racist thought, action, and behavior to other racists, and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you. So does that grab anyone? His was more of a personal, and his was more outwardly. Was anyone grabbed by any of those, or was any of them something that really touched you? Really? Nothing? Yeah.
I think number 10, the continue to take a moral personal inventory of our intended and unintended racist actions and behaviors and promptly admitted it.
I think that takes a lot of reading, understanding, and dialogue with people of color to really understand what those are sometimes. I had never heard the term microaggression until about 3.5-4 years ago. And we're starting to realize what that is, the way in which we hurt people by our actions in ways that were not at all intended, but are truly because of our own ignorance, is something I think it takes a lot of reading, understanding, and dialogue to understand what we're doing sometimes. I guess, like, one example for me was probably giving advice to somebody that was not asked for in a way that I might not have done with somebody that was white. And I thought, wow, why did I do that until my friend told me how that hurt her? You know, I think it's kind of like, why did I think that I was smarter or better and would give her advice in the same way that I wouldn't have given to another adult?
Well, last time we talked, because of this list over here all the way to the right, that's why you think you're smarter and better.
Yeah.
Because society has told you that you were smarter and better. And you've been rewarded as if you were smarter. Yep.
Number 9 is the one that hit me. May direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And that just reminds me of, you know, readings I've done or people I've talked to or groups I've been involved in. It's like, I'm especially interested in the except when to do so would injure them or others. Is the whole thing when white people are basically, you know, trying to be individually apologetic to individual black people, not necessarily that they had contact with, but kind of making a big deal about, you know, showing that, well, I'm not racist, when really that injures them on some level, and what we really need to do is making direct amends to black people as a community with our money and with our, you know, supporting black businesses and that kind of thing. Unless it's something that, you know, somebody, like you just said, somebody calls you out right there, then you, yeah, definitely. But like, I'm not expressing this very well, but kind of like making it the black person's problem that you need to be absolved of your guilt. You know, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It strikes me that we've got, there's this intentional aspect and unintentional, informed and uninformed. And we've got to be aware of both issues within ourselves, and that other people have that too. And so it's that we educate ourselves and then try to find ways to connect and take away those judgments. But it's asking us to figure that out, how to do that. And a lot of people just either don't want to or won't take the time to do it. So maybe we need more conversation with each other about how to figure that out. And your point about not understanding that one column of all these abuses that many people were ignorant of. Well, that's not an excuse to keep facilitating that, making sure we're not ignorant of it.
How many people feel uninformed?
Feel what?
Uninformed.
Uninformed?
All you need to do is read that list. Go down that list. Because the list does what the list is supposed to do. It's supposed to take every black person they can between the ages of 18 and 54 and take them out of the workplace so you don't have to compete with them. And so from here, these things morph. Slavery morphed into the black codes. The black codes morphed into the KKK, and all the way down till you get to the prison industrial complex, you know. So all of that morphs, you know. They all do the same thing. So that's all you need to know. Yeah.
It appears to me that so much of that list is because of who we've elected to take our representatives from every level, from local to national.
So then you're as responsible as they are.
Yes, you're right.
So I'm having a problem with what you started with about abolishing whiteness.
Yeah.
Do following his 12-step programs abolish whiteness? I don't see the connection. Maybe I'm missing it. So maybe you can help at least understand that. So abolish whiteness. I just don't, that doesn't register with me.
Who can help him out?
Take away the difference. If we don't have, if suddenly everybody is a person of color because we aren't white or people of color, but now we are all people of color. So we don't have white bread anymore, we just have whole wheat. At least that's how I see it, because when there's a difference, that's what happens, becoming more white. So it's not getting rid of us, but it's integrating everyone so that we all become a community of the same color.
Did I see a hand back here? Yeah.
There is no country that produces white people, or ever has. There are people of different ethnicities. There are people of different, from different backgrounds, but they're not white. The black people were produced by slavers. They're not necessarily, they may not even know what African nation they were originally from. And I've heard people say, you know, black pride's okay, why isn't white pride okay? White pride's not okay because it literally takes other people's lives. It focuses on a color, not on a piece, on people or peace.
It's still hard, but you know, abolish whiteness. I mean, yeah, it's. I'll get there, I guess.
Because whiteness is an American construct.
Exactly.
All it is privilege.
Okay, if you tie it to
not
privilege.
Not white people. I said not white people.
If you tie it to
privilege.
I said
whiteness.
Whiteness.
The whole idea of race was constructed at the end of the 19th century. Okay, when the anthropologists started looking at different people, if you look at the DNA of people, you can't separate them into races like we do with color, etc. I mean, the differences isn't there genetically. It was a social construct. Whiteness is a social construct. There is no race. I mean, biologically, I'm talking DNA. I'm talking. You know, it was a social construct to separate people. And there's a wonderful podcast I couldn't advertise higher called Seeing White that just blew my mind. It's out of Duke University, and I recommend it to anybody that struggles with this because it kind of goes through the history of how in the United States race was constructed in order to maintain power and control, and all these things were constructed.
And when we look at a picture of Jesus drawn as a person of color and say, wow, that's something, that's because he's not white, and that's what we think of whiteness is like God.
So if you know all of that, what's keeping you from doing this?
Doing what?
From doing, working through this.
Or you mean undoing that?
Undoing it,
yeah.
Yes.
Lack of qualifications. Being a white female, I am often tasked with Martin Luther King celebration because in the public schools, that's Veterans Day and Martin Luther King are the two mandatory assemblies that we have to...
I'm sorry, could you speak up a little bit?
Oh, certainly. In Washington public schools, there are two mandatory assemblies that we need to educate our children in, and that is Veterans Day and Martin Luther King Day. And I am often called upon to provide the programming for Martin Luther King, and I feel entirely unqualified to do so. I have the education and I understand where we came from, but I don't have the experience. And sometimes I feel that I am extraordinarily sensitive to the fact that I never want to have that struggle, you know, as seen through my eyes necessarily. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, all you, all you have to do is read this. Go to your history books, go somewhere and find this, and read this. That tells them all they need to know. This is what happened.
Let's say there's a general failure to do step one on this list.
And what's that?
Admit we're responsible for racism. I mean, when you ask what we think about white people, I said indigenous. You look at, I mean, Joe Biden was called out for a racist action, and he said he doesn't have a racist bone in his body. He's not admitting what's that.
Well, again, the person, again, the person versus the culture, the community, the history of it all. So that's where the stumbling block is in the white community. It's all about, well, I'm not that way, therefore, I don't have to think about it. So again, it's a luxury of not having to think about it. Because you're not living it.
Yeah.
You know, we all, that's human nature. We want to just...
And to me, that's one way that this did not speak to me. This seemed a little more personal. Examine yourself, discover the racism you participate in, repent, make amends. And when I look at that list, I see that as the sort of the sins of our society as opposed to just my personal sins. And I feel like our repentance and our absolution are moving on to be at... in many cases at the social level, weren't the personal. And if you go around calling individuals racist, they're going to say, no, not me.
That's what
and
I'm saying.
And might not advance the cause if you spend too much time accusing individuals and not enough time just
well,
sort of seeing structural.
Well, you weren't at the first one, were you?
Part of it, yeah.
Okay. That's why I said that individual, calling individual racist doesn't, it means nothing.
Right.
You know? Where racist is power plus prejudice plus power equals this kind of thing, you know, where our elected officials do it for us. And you live very well because of this. You know, it's not an individual thing on your part.
Yeah.
But you're living very well because of this.
And I get that, so, but it may not help if we want, you know, white people, white males, to feel personally guilty for that. They may just react
I'm
and say,
feel personally
I know you're
guilty.
Not, I know you're not, but one can do that, and I think it can backfire.
Can I make a suggestion? Can
yep.
you hear me? One of the things that we've done at Holden and some groups is we've gone back and created a more truthful history of our lives. We all think our grandparents came over to this country and got land, and we don't really know where it came from, or we think it was given to us by the government, and we have these educations, and if you go back, research your family, figure out where you live, the land you live on, the schools you've attended, how you got where you got, you will find an intersection with everything on that list on that far side that made it easier for us. And I know, because I've done it. That made it easier for us to be here at Holden Village together. Mm-hmm. And it is until you understand whose land you lived on, how your grandparents got what they got, and how you got what you got, how you got it. Your dad got an education from the GI Bill, all of those things, how you maybe got a house or a loan. You will find that those are all going to intersect with your lives in ways that you may not understand unless you've gone and done that personal history. So I would really encourage everybody to do that, to get a good sense of understanding of that list.
I mean, Holden was bought for a dollar. Mm-hmm. How many black people can say, I got land for a dollar? You know? So... that's privilege right there. I mean, we started off with chips. Yeah. Anything else from that sheet? Yes, sir.
On this reconstruction, Henry Louis Gates Jr. has a new public television program called Reconstruction that's excellent and it goes through all of those things, probably available at public libraries soon, if not now.
Anyone else?
Would you comment on that, Berlin?
On what?
Like that program, for example. Do you feel that's a good tool for us?
Yes, it's a very good...
What's the name of it?
What's the name of it? It could be just Reconstruction, maybe. That's the name of it.
That's the name of the program, Reconstruction.
Yeah, Reconstruction.
Starts at the end of slavery and goes through every one of those things.
Who understands what Reconstruction... Who knows? Does everyone know what Reconstruction is?
No.
It's a 3 or 4 hour program.
that's hundreds of years.
It's a time in our history. It's right after the slaves were freed, and society was beginning to look at slaves as people. And within that 12-year period, from 1865 to 1877, blacks were moving into property, buying land. There were 2 black congressmen. It's a lot like Obama. Progress was being made. People felt good about where society was going. And then a guy named Andrew Jackson came along. It's a lot like Trump.
Andrew Johnson.
Johnson came along. And he was an avowed racist. And he got rid of all the progressive things that had happened in that 12-year period. Mm-hmm. So that's what Reconstruction is.
It's that time.
Because his constituents were afraid of black people assuming power.
Right.
They were afraid of losing their own power.
Right.
So they made laws getting rid of the newborn rights of people of color.
And one thing that happened, there was a populist movement with the poor blacks and the poor whites starting to work together for social change. So the prosperous whites started turning the poor whites against the blacks by saying, you know, at least you're not black, you know, sort of things. And that blew that populist movement up.
So then the thing I always wonder about then is when you know the history, when you go through those 14 things, I'm looking at number 6, we are entirely ready to admit and remove all of our defective racist acts and behaviors. Like, how do you go about disentangling society from the history that started in the 1600s? Just seems like such a big
task.
Well, did I hear someone say something?
No, I was just going to say, I understand individually, but then you think of the broader society, and that just gets overwhelming. That's what I wonder about.
Well, if we can send a man to the moon, it doesn't, you know, you work at it. You know, you work at it. You don't just do it all at once. I mean, I'm not assuming that you meant that. But I mean, our job is to work at it. Our job is to hammer away at these things, because knowing what we know about why people end up where they are, our job is to figure out how to hammer away at that, how to deny this, how to disrupt this. When you see this stuff going on, how do you disrupt it? You know, figure out ways to disrupt, you know, things as they are. And some of it is just speaking up, or just, you know, I was reading this article about this white guy who saw a cop beating up this black guy, and he just stood there with his camera and took a picture. That disrupts it, because he knows that he's on camera and that picture is going to get out, you know. So things like that. I'm not talking big global things. I'm talking things that, you know, you can do.
I think it's important, it's obviously important to vote, but that it's important to communicate with the people that you voted in, or maybe that you didn't vote in, and just say that, you know, this is what I believe, or go to town hall meetings, or go to whatever is there, because if we vote these people in, then we need to just keep on saying, this is important to me. This is, I'm your constituent. This is what's important. So I think that's...
And the school board and what books they teach their history right. out of is huge, yeah. really huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyone else from that page that anything grabbed anybody? Yeah.
I just think a big issue right now is it's in part of it's in the Supreme Court even with the census and who to count, who gets to vote. And I'm not sure it's not just racist, it's a power issue, but I think it's a real one right in front of us that people are people and they need to be represented in our culture and making it harder for black people and white people who want to support black people or any people have to figure out where everybody should have a fair, equal opportunity to participate. And this is, that might be a swing in the next election.
Well, you need to ask yourself, what have I done to disrupt things as they are? What have I done to disrupt this from continuing to happen, from taking our young black people between the ages of 18 and 54 out of the marketplace or out of the workplace? Or, you know, what have I done to slow that down, to trip that up? In your own communities, you know, what have you done? I know, I'm sure you've seen it. And then after this, you're going to see it more, I hope.
I think there, I've started to see more and more little opportunities. Like, it does feel helpless a lot of the time when it feels so global, but actually there are school board meetings and neighborhood meetings and, you know, a meeting about this apartment complex that's going to go up, it's going to be affordable housing, happening all the time. And to just speak to the sort of personal and global thing, I think, thank you for recommending the book White Fragility. I'm about two-thirds through. And reading that book and disrupting my own personal race, white fragility is helping me realize how much coded language happens at those meetings and how much potential there is for disrupting it. But it's not until I've seen it through a personal lens in myself that I can see it in the sort of political arena too. So to me, for me personally right now, doing both is necessary. And I need to disrupt it myself if I ever even have hope of seeing it to be able to disrupt it societally, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And this is never going to go away. I mean, unless we stop it, it's just going to morph and morph and morph into something different every generation. You know, so... you know, be aware of that. Know that's gonna happen. Anything else? Anybody else? Any more questions? Any more?
I have one more.
Yep.
Just on a really practical basis, I've really been interested in Kiva, KIVA, for making microloans to people around the world. And I realized you can make loans to people in the U.S. And I realized I can look up the pictures of the people and I can find black business owners or hopeful black business owners and support them through microloans to them. There's somebody who just bought his own barber shop where he's been cutting hair for a long time, but he was leasing it. So it's like this I'm able to transfer some of my wealth to other people to help them in their own businesses and get them in that 18 to 54 year old age range, right? To help get them the good employment that they're already working on, or somebody in San Diego who has a gym and is expanding his gym so that he can make it more accessible to working parents and all kind of, and he's doing youth empowerment in that gym too. So that's just been a really nice little way. I feel like it's small, right? But it's a little bit and meaningful for some people.
And you're going to have to give up some of your privileges to make this happen. And that's the hard part. But you're going to have to give some of those privileges away, give them up, let them go, in order so that other people may have privileges. So I'll end on good trouble. That's what we're supposed to be. That's what God asked us to do, to make good trouble. All right, thank you all very much.
Thank you.